Back here on the Mighty 690 KGGF, Sam Speck, as well as Jacob Weber and Keith Martin, two gentlemen from the K-State Research and Extension District here. Part of our Wildcat Wednesday is it talking a little bit about some fall time themes because, hey, it's basically here. It may not say it on the calendar, but the weather is
the weather says
speaking
it's
otherwise.
Fall.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I've been enjoying the weather.
I love it.
You and Deborah talking earlier about the cool weather, and it's kind of nice, but I think we'll probably have a little bit of summer yet before we get to the end of September.
Yeah, it'll give us a little bit more fight before it's done.
So. And even then, it could carry over into October a little bit. I mean, who knows what the weather's going to do, but it sure is nice. Enjoy it today.
Yeah, and they'll enjoy the nice cool down. I ain't arguing with the moderate temperatures. They are very, very nice, certainly.
It's so awesome. Yeah.
Well, what do we have to do? It said, for a little bit of fall time, taking care of the yard and pastures here. So
I've been getting several questions about fall armyworms in pastures. And fall armyworms are a caterpillar that's going to have a life cycle of, I guess, a life cycle when it's hatched from between maybe 15 to 25 days, depending on the temperature. Eventually get up to about an inch and a half in length. And I remember a few weeks ago, Jacob was talking about caterpillars. They're going to molt and have six different instars, but it's that last one that usually does most of the damage. And they eat the foliage is what they do. And you can actually see large patches of maybe completely eaten, or maybe in some cases even when it's warmer temperatures, they actually cut the top of the foliage off and it just turns brown just because it dries out. So fall armyworms are something to be concerned about in your pasture. Like everything, it seems like by the time we notice it really bad, they're a little harder to control and most of the damage has been done. But fall armyworms, the threshold is going to depend on the stage. In other words, how many should there be out there before I think about spraying? It's going to depend upon how large are the worms. Basically, the larger the worms are, the harder their control and the more foliage they've already eaten. For example, if you find worms that are three-quarters of an inch long, it makes more sense to spray those than ones that are an inch and a half long because they're going to die in a day anyway, and they've already done most of the damage. The other thing that's important to consider is what is the value of the crop. If it's in an established fescue pasture, even though that's a valuable crop, that would be less of a risk than, for example, a newly seeded alfalfa stand. So it's going to kind of depend on the crop. If you want to try to find them when they're smaller, which is the ideal situation, they're actually not large enough to chew up the leaves completely. When they're smaller, they actually only are able to maybe eat one side of the leaf. It's called a window pane effect. They just eat pretty much the cuticle off the side of the leaf and almost leave a clear hole. They're not able to eat the center out of the leaf. So just look for that. Or if you happen, I don't have an insect net, but if you do have an insect net, you can go out in the lush areas and take a few sweeps. And fall armyworms are going to have a inverted Y on their head capsule, and they're also going to have four spots right there on their last segment, and that's one of the ways you can identify them. On our Facebook page, WED Agriculture, we have a really good publication from the University of Arkansas with some pictures, and also we have a video which I found from the Noble Foundation, which talks about a lot more detail. Or, as always, I'd be glad to visit with anyone at 620-784-5337 if you'd like to call and visit about controlling fall armyworms. So what you do is going to be like a lot of our extension answers. It's going to be it depends on how large they are. It depends on what crop they are. But control is relatively inexpensive, so that makes a little easier to recommend control than maybe if the control was more expensive. I'd be glad to visit with anyone. And those of you that are crop producers that are getting ready to plant wheat, that's something to probably to have not later on fall armyworms can move from pastures to a more lush crop like a newly seeded wheat. And obviously the damage you're going to do in a wheat field is a lot more, even yeah. has a lot much bigger economic impact than what they're going to do in a fescue pasture. Although this year with hay being a little short, our fescue pastures are even a little more valuable than sometimes during the year.
Yeah, so a couple of subtle, you know, almost obvious ways to notice that they are out in your fescue, and then also, you know, a good tip to take away the small ones, not necessarily the ones that are in the end of their life cycle.
Another way, something I mentioned, if you see lots of birds out in your field, mm-hmm. they're probably out there feeding on the, or obviously you're going to notice them with the large eaten areas. By that time, most of the damage has already been done. Yeah. They don't overwinter here. They're actually, moths blow up from the south, and sometimes those moths all come in waves. So it tends to be where most of the worms are going to be all the same size because the eggs were laid about the same time. But occasionally that doesn't happen. You may have multiple sizes out there. It's just going to kind of depend on the when the eggs were laid. But the moth, they don't overwinter here. They are caused by moths. And I know Jacob was talking that he's seen them in fescue lawns before as well.
They're not limited just to pastures.
They're going to eat on anything that any kind of – and they prefer lush foliage. So they'll move from a fescue pasture to a nearby wheat field very readily because that's just usually more lush and more tender.
And occasionally you see them marching across the highway. I've seen that.
I have heard that before I came up here many years ago. I guess they were so bad that they were wiping out wheat fields and they were walking across.
I've seen it.
You've seen it?
I saw it.
Crossing the road?
Yeah, I've seen the worms crossing.
A worm slick, huh?
Yeah. Be careful. How fast you're driving in those areas could end up in the ditch.
Yeah, but, slide your tires on.
Yeah, I've talked to folks. Lawn looks okay one day, and maybe two or three days later, you go out and lawn has disappeared. The grass is gone, and wonder what happened. And, fall armyworm has moved in.
The good news is if it's an established lawn with a good root system or an established pasture.
Right.
All you're doing is removing the foliage, and it's going to live. Now, if you're talking about a seedling alfalfa situation, that's much different because there's probably not enough carbohydrate reserves in that little bitty seedling to survive. So that's another one of those factors which determine whether to spray or not.
Yeah, it can happen suddenly. It seems like it happens suddenly, and Keith talked about the six instars on the insect. The larva phase, the caterpillar phase, is just one part of the life cycle of the this insect. It starts out as an egg, and, of course, the moths, like he said, they come in. I've heard one professor describe the egg-laying activity of fall armyworm moths as an aerial dispersal. They just spread the eggs out like you'd crop dusting an area. I don't know if that's true or not, but anyway, they are very prolific. They start out very tiny, and you will never notice them. The only time you notice them is when they get into that last instar, and that instar is really a segment of the caterpillar's life cycle when it has to stop feeding for maybe a day or two and shed its outer skin so it can get larger. It has an inner layers of inner skin that develop, and it's very flexible, elastic, and it'll stretch and allow them to get larger. But up to a certain point, its outer skin stops stretching, and the worm either has to live with that skin stuck tight to it. It'll die if it can't shed that skin. And there's some insecticides that will prevent that molting of the insect. I don't know if
that's one of the things that I did find a good publication from the University of Arkansas that talked about fall armyworms and pastures. And one of the things that said, just like Jacob mentioned, was The eggs are going to hatch in about 3 to 4 days, and those first instars are about a day and a half to 3 days, depending on temperature, and also the pupa stage is about 10 days. So all, if you add all that up together, it's about 45 days or something like that. And as Jacob said, the smaller the worms are, those insect growth regulators are probably a better choice because they're going to have a little bit longer residual than the contact insecticides. So if the worms are smaller, the growth regulators are probably going to be the best choice on what to use.
But really, when they get to be like a teenage boy that needs about a dozen hamburgers at one meal just to make them happy, that's the phase. That's the last instar of that fall army worm. And that's when that things start happening real fast. And it can be like your lawn's there one day, and the next day it's gone. And you go out and you wonder what's going on. Well, to find a fall armyworm, you can mix about a quarter cup of dishwashing soap and a gallon of water and then pour it over the lawn. Mm. And it'll bring those worms right up to the surface real quick. And then you can say, oh, okay, I got fall armyworm. Well, about that time, if the lawn is gone, forget it. Don't worry about spraying it. It's too late. Just let it go. They'll come back. Maybe it'll put a little fertilizer on if you had and water it, and hopefully have some good growing conditions after that. But they go through pupa phase, and then after the pupa phase is the adult mature insect phase, which is a moth's mate. The male mates with the female, and the female goes out and spreads more eggs, and you have another generation start. If there's enough time in the fall, you have another generation of moths coming on, or caterpillars coming on to do more damage later in the season.
From what I read there in the publication, sometimes they'll come in waves. So even if you do have them, you may be looking for them in about the 30 days from now. At least maybe they suggested waiting about 2 weeks and starting to go scout that same area, because as long as we have this mild weather we're talking about, it's possible that we could have even another generation.
That's definitely what you want to get on the home front, and just again try and hit them when they're at that young generation and avoid that. But it's interesting that you say that. Again, it's kind of like a crop dusting act, you know, not necessarily 100%, you know, to our knowledge accurate, but interesting that they had done that. And at that point, it's out of your control. There's really no avoiding it.
And his teenager analogy was right. It was awesome because from what I was reading, about over 90% of the foliage intake is going to be in that last in the last instar, and it's going to last about 4 days. Yeah. So
you'll definitely know
if you
that
could
you
get
haven't.
Rid of them some way before that, that would be awesome. But the problem is, they're in such a large area, it's probably going to be a little harder to find them. You're going to have to be definitely looking for them. You can't do that by driving by at 50 or 60 miles an hour.
Yeah, well, good stuff. Just about here to the bottom of the hour. But, Jacob, I know you wanted to hit on a couple of things with weed and feed in the yard
The lady that called mentioned weed and feed. And sometimes the combination of fertilizer and herbicide can be of benefit. In fescue lawns, the late October application could include the weed killer for dandelion control. Fall's an excellent time to control dandelions, and it's fairly simple to kill with just a mild weed killer like 2,4-D. And it's also at a time of the year when we're not going to be bothering other plants because gardens are done. The shrubs are no longer putting out new growth, so a good time to put a wheat and feed combination on. However, if you have overseed of the lawn, you want to skip that because that herbicide can damage new emerging grass plants, and so we probably want to avoid putting something like that on. But that would be the one time I would suggest maybe a combination of fertilizer and herbicide. Follow label directions. Make sure you get it on according to label directions. That means you really have to calibrate that spreader and get the application rate right down to a precise amount so you get the right amount of herbicide on. Because just a haphazard application may end up with either no effect at all or damage to the lawn.
Yeah, it's a good point that you make. Less collateral damage with this time of the year. You know, you don't have to worry about other plants that you may be harming or
Or
that's
your
also
yard.
True of herbicides that tend to volatilize. These milder temperatures make them much less likely to go from a liquid to a vapor just because we have. But this, you still wind, and you can still get drift, so you still need to be careful and be mindful of wind direction and crops are susceptible. I guess you could say crops that are susceptible to damage. You still need to be vigilant in that, but there is less likelihood of volatilization just because we have milder temperatures.
Good stuff. All right, that's Keith Martin and Jacob Weber with the K-State Research and Extension District. We will check back in with Wildcat Wednesday, of course, next Wednesday. It's either you two or a couple of others. Either way,
I'll be
thanks
here.
Thanks for squeezing some time in, guys.
Okay.
You bet.
This is the Mighty 690 KGGF.